everybody.
Hi, friends.
And welcome to the first episode of
2019.
Yes, the
Bitchery of History. I'm Allison.
My name's Max.
This week, I'm going to be talking to you, about Manuela Sayens.
Wow.
Which one of my good friends has that same last name? I wonder if they're related. Yeah.
How's it spelled?
S-A-E-N-Z.
Oh, I like it. For a second, I thought you were talking about Super Saiyans, like from Goku.
What?
No?
Oh my God, I have a story to tell you later.
Okay.
I don't want to tell you while I was recording.
This is going to be a punchy episode, I think.
Just
and I will
me.
Be talking about Lakshmi Bai, the Rani of Jhansi. Remember the last episode when I was like, I realized in the research that Mami Wata meant many different things?
Yeah.
Turns out Rani of Jhansi, which is what her name has been listed on in our schedule of women to cover, Rani actually means queen, and Jhansi is a province in India. So Rani of Jhansi means
all the
queen of Jhansi.
All the queens that ever were.
No, just the one. And so we're talking about Rani Lakshmi Bai, Queen Lakshmi.
Oh, okay, got it. We can refer to her as queen throughout the episode.
Yes,
if that
I'm
is
going
easier.
To...
Because I am definitely calling mine Manuela.
Yeah, I just wanted to be clear so that the people listening who might know about Lakshmi Bai don't sit here going, he knows that that's not her name, right?
We do that's know. Not,
yes,
we
know.
Okay,
we know.
Great.
Okay, so Rani Lakshmi Bai, Rani, was originally born Manikarnika on November 19th, 1828, maybe 1835.
That's kind of a big difference. Normally it's like 1827 or 1828. We're not really sure. That's like a lot. That's
a
like
lot.
8 years.
It's a big well, this is like Sophia Brahe from however long ago, where it was like a 12-year period in between.
Yeah. Whoopsies.
She was born into a Marathai Karade Brahmin family. Now, to explain that a little bit. What this basically means is it refers to the Marathai people, or Marathai people, M-A-R-A-T-H-I. They're an ethnic group in India who speak Marathai and inhabit the state of Maharashtra.
Okay.
Now, Karade Brahmin refers to the castle where they live.
Okay.
So it's the Marathai Karade Brahmin family.
Gotcha.
Now, her father was Marupant Tambe, and her mother was Bagirathai Sapre. And actually, her mother dies when she's 4 years old.
Mm.
Very young. But again, we got a great dad in the mix.
Yes!
And
shout out to the dads.
He was working for a court Peshwa, which is basically, Peshwa is like the equivalent of a prime minister for that specific district in
got
India.
It.
And the Peshwa actually treated Manikarnika like his own daughter.
Aww.
He actually had a nickname for her, Chabli, which means playful.
That's my nickname.
She had a very independent childhood compared to the others of her age. And her studies actually included shooting, horsemanship, fencing, and a sport called Mallakhamba. And I am so sorry if I'm pronouncing all of these Indian words incorrectly. It is what it is. Which is kind of like it's an aerial form of yoga, which is actually like popular right now.
Yeah, that's cool.
Right. So in 1842, she is married to the Maharaja of Jhansi. His name is Raja Gangadhar Rao Nawalkar. And actually, after the marriage, her name is changed to Lakshmi Bai, which is in honor of the Hindu goddess Lakshmi.
Okay.
Although she did observe the custom of parda, which is it's a custom of not appearing in public without a veil, she did not stop practicing the various sports that she loved.
Yes.
That she loved. And she actually formed and trained her own army out of the female friends at court, out of her women friends.
Yes, amazing. I'm on board.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Now, in 1851, you're starting to get hints of where this is going, because Lakshmi is actually a revolutionary. In 1851, she gives birth to a boy, Damodar Rao, who actually died, unfortunately, after 4 months.
Mm.
And their son's death actually kind of destroyed the Maharaja. He's described as being heartbroken at this time. He actually passes away 2 years later.
Oh my God.
Right. But
did not see that coming.
The day before his death, and this is kind of where all of the problems,
the culmination,
the apex of this story. He adopts, the day before his death, he adopts another son, also called Damodar Rao. It's this tradition of these Maharajas adopting a son in order to keep the lineage going. And they do it usually right as they're about to die.
Okay. Oh, okay. 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 I got it now.
So the adoption happens in the presence of a British political officer. This, of course, is during British colonial times. And the Maharaja hands, actually, this official a letter instructing that the child be treated with respect as the new Maharaja. That being said, the letter also instructed the government of Jhansi to be given to his widow for her lifetime.
Wow.
That being said, at this time, the British East India Company, which of course is controlling the area at this time, had this rule in place called the Doctrine of Lapse, which allowed the British government to annex any Indian province whose ruler passed away without a legitimate heir. And since in Britain, it has to be a bloodline.
Right. You can't see it, but my eyes are rolling.
Right. So, of course, when he dies, Governor General Lord Dalhousie.
I want that as my
Dalhousie,
name.
Governor
General Lord.
Yeah.
Governor letter. What should I, when you have to fill out like on airline tickets, I hate that I have to put in like or Mrs. I really wanted to put Master the other day, but then someone president was like, that's for a child. And I was like, damn it, I just want to be a master. Yes, but that's what I'm going to put from now on is Governor General Lord.
I'm the Governor General Lord Alison Powell.
Yes.
Yes.
And you can refer to me as GGL.
That. Hey, Sydney, can you put that as Alison's new title on the website?
GGL. Governor GGL. General Lord.
Exactly. So they, of course, reject Damodar Rao's claim to the throne. They annex the state into its territories. And when Rani is informed of this, she allegedly cries out, quote, I shall not surrender my Jhansi. So she does the legal thing first. She appeals the ruling to the court in London, who, of course, throws the case out without standing. And they give her, in March 1954, they give her an annual pension of 60,000 rupees. Another one says she gets about 5,000. And she is ordered to leave the palace and the fort forever, never to return. So that being said,
this is not going to go well, England.
No.
Not
so
going to go well.
1857 is when the revolt breaks out.
Yes! Yes!
And actually, the revolt was started by Indian people of Indian descent who had been brought into the British service because the British had supplied them with new bullets, these new cartridges that for some reason they had to bite on as they were loading into the gun. Not very clear on why they had to put the bullets into their mouth before like they put into the... I don't know, but...
Is it just like a thing? Like a tradition?
No, I don't know if it's like the military is weird, or to help do something. Apparently they had to bite on the cartridge for some reason.
Okay.
And so knowing this, they were supplied cartridges that had been greased with beef and pork.
What the hell? Right.
Exactly. And so finding this to be an attempt by the British to taint their religion, the soldiers mutinied.
Duh.
And actually, the revolution quickly reaches northern India and Jhansi, where Rani is. The inmates in the jail at Jhansi actually take over the jail, killing British officers and soldiers. Some say that the mob, essentially, this turned into an angry mob, went on to start killing the soldiers' families and children, their wives and children as well.
Nice.
Rani actually gives shelter to a lot of these families who are threatened by the revolters.
Okay.
And while the British are forced...
The Indian families that are threatened, not the Or no, the English family.
The wives and the children.
Of the soldiers.
Yeah.
So English families. Okay. Exactly. I just want to be clear. There's a lot of people flying around.
Right. It's a it's an angry mob.
Okay.
So the British are forced to focus their attention elsewhere. And Ronnie's actually left alone to rule Jhansi for a little while. There are other reports. Some say that the story goes that actually it was the British officers and soldiers were rounded up and then brutally murdered before Ronnie was involved.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronnie actually said that she wasn't involved at all when she was questioned about it. She quickly proves her ability as a ruler during this little lapse in time. She leads her troops against skirmishes that break out in and around Jhansi. And while Ronnie didn't actually agree with the violence of the revolters, she longed even more so for an India that was free from the British colonialists, right? So after the British regained their foothold in the revolt, they marched toward Jhansi, and the queen started preparing for battle. The fight lasts for 4 days. It's 1,540 British soldiers against an army of 20,000 rebels.
That's so not going well. Oh my God.
Now, the rebels are under the leadership of someone named Tatya Tope, who's actually a friend and mentor of Ronnie. And unfortunately, the British soldiers were much better trained.
Hold on. I thought you said 1,500 versus 20,000.
Yes. But they were...
And they still won?
Yes.
No.
Because they just weren't... The British soldiers were... Just had more training.
They had smallpox, okay? Right, exactly. They were cheating.
See,
they
this cheating. Is like, you know how there's all these stories of these soldiers, like these aristocrat soldiers from like the 1300s and 1400s, like, I'm so great on the battlefield and I'm unconquered, I'm glorious. It's literally because you were trained and you had nothing else to do, and the people that you're slaughtering.
It's like the Hunger Games. They're from District 1.
Exactly.
Okay. There's nobody's going to stand a chance.
Nothing. No one.
Oh my God. Oh, what a bummer.
And so Ronnie is actually advised to leave the fort.
Okay.
And she does, with her son tied to her back. She's followed by her trusted aides.
Sorry, who's her son? Didn't her son die?
Badomar. No, this is the adopted son.
The adopted son. Okay, thank you.
So they leave the fort and they go to join the rest of the rebel force, which is about 150 miles from, or kilometers, excuse me, from Jhansi, where she meets up with the other leaders of the revolts. And again, she trains and forms a battalion to go back into the fight.
Yes.
Now, apparently there's this announcement or this battle cry, a proclamation that she gives before this next battle. And she says, quote, "We fight for independence. In the words of Lord Krishna, we will, if we are victorious, enjoy the fruits of victory. If defeated and killed on the field of battle, we shall surely earn eternal glory and salvation."
Witness.
Witness me.
Amazing.
A few kilometers away, there's this other fort from Jhansi. There's this other fort called Gawalior, which is where the final stand takes place. Ronnie devises this ambitious and daring plan to conquer the fort. And actually, much to the surprise of the British, she succeeds. She's successful in capturing the force. However, it's short-lived because the Maharaja of Gawalior is friends with the British.
Ew.
And they march back on the fort. They get resupplied and they get reinforcements, and they actually take the fort back, forcing Ronnie to flee once again, fighting her way through enemy lines again with her son tied to her back.
Yes, praise.
Now, one story of Ronnie fighting goes this way. She puts on the clothes of a male Indian officer, and she attacks a British officer. He dismounts her.
Yeah.
And actually wounds her with his saber. And while she lies bleeding on the roadside, she sees the soldier who had wounded her and fired at him with a pistol, whereupon he comes up and dispatches her once and for all. Another story that I read showed that as she was fleeing and cutting her way again with a sword in each hand, she suffers battle wounds but is able to make it away.
Okay.
Whatever the case, she does suffer fatal wounds at the Battle of Gawalior. She hands over her son to a trusted general. And she dies June 18th, 1857, maybe 1858. She has her body immediately cremated so that it can't be taken by the British.
Wow.
And her tomb today is actually situated in Phul Bagh area of Gwalior. One final note.
Please.
On her life. Well, first of all, if she was born in 1835 and she died in 1857, she was 32 years old.
Man, I gotta step it up.
32
I gotta step up my
years
game.
Old. So the commanding officer of the British Army, who was actually sent to crush the rebellion of Jhansi, said about Rani, actually, quote, "She was remarkable for her beauty, cleverness, and perseverance, which made her the most dangerous of all the rebel leaders, the best and bravest of all." 20 years later, a man named Colonel Malleson wrote in The History of the Indian Mutiny, Volume 3, "Whatever her faults in British eyes may have been, her countrymen will ever remember that she was driven by ill treatment into rebellion, and that she lived and died for her country. We cannot forget her contribution for India."
Wow.
November 19th, the anniversary of Rani's death, is celebrated as Martyrs' Day in Jhansi to honor actually all of the lives lost in the rebellion of 1857. On top of the countless statues that are devoted to her, Rani's name is everywhere in the country. There's the Lakshmibai National University of Physical Education in Gwalior, Lakshmibai National College of Physical Education in Thiruvananthapuram. There's Maharani Lakshmibai Medical College in Jhansi, Rani Lakshmibai Central Agricultural University in Jhansi, which was founded in 2013.
Wow.
The Rani Jhansi Marine National Park in the Bay of Bengal. There's a woman's unit of the Indian National Army, which is named the Rani of Jhansi Regiment.
Amazing.
Two postage stamps are issued in 1957 to commemorate the centenary of the rebellion.
Wow.
And she's also depicted actually in Victorian novels. Now, she is depicted as bloodthirsty, responsible for the massacre of British colonials, or actually even scandalously as a promiscuous woman in relationships with British men. But she's also in Indian novels as well, where she's depicted as an individual solely dedicated to the cause of Indian independence.
That's amazing.
So that is Rani Lakshmibai of Jhansi.
What a story.
What a lady.
Okay, get ready for Manuela.
I'm so excited.
Now, she was born in Quito. She was an illegitimate child of Maria Joaquina Azipuru and the married Spanish nobleman, Simon Vergara. Now, her mother was abandoned by her family, like the mother's family, because because of the pregnancy, because it's illegitimate. Yeah. Wah, 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 wah. And then she also died as well when Manuela was still very young.
Ay, ay.
And so she was sent to school at the convent of Santa Catalina, where she learned to read and write. But she was forced to leave the convent at the age of 17 when it was discovered that she had a relationship with an army officer.
Mm.
Now, one source does say that he seduced her. So this quote unquote relationship may not have been consensual.
Right.
We don't know. We weren't there.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. But in any case, it forces her to leave the convent. So she then goes back and lives with her father, the Spanish nobleman, for several years. And then he arranged for her to marry an English merchant named James Thorne. Now, Thorne was twice her age when they moved to Lima, Peru in 1819. And Manuela lived there as an aristocrat. She held social gatherings in her home. Guests included political leaders, military officers, and her guests would share military secrets about the revolution with her.
Sure. Sounds a little like 355.
So in 1819, shortly after she and her husband moved to Peru, Manuela became an active member in the conspiracy against the Viceroy of Peru after Simon Bolivar successfully, quote unquote, liberated New Granada. New Granada.
Potato, whatever.
So in 1822, Manuela left her husband and traveled back to her home city, her home area, Quito, to meet up with Simon Bolivar. The two had exchanged love letters already, and she began visiting him as he moved from one country to another. She supported his revolutionary cause by gathering information, distributing leaflets, and protesting for women's rights.
Get it?
Manuela quickly became the most prominent female figures of the wars for independence and received the Order of the Sun. Wow. Honoring her revolution, her services in the revolution. She earned the rank of general because of her ability to gather information.
General Manuela.
She rode with an army on a 950-mile mountain trek that saw 700 people die or desert.
Jesus, Lord in heaven.
And she was just like, doop, 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 gotta keep going, doop, 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 gotta keep going.
If Hannibal could ride an elephant through the Alps, that
I'm doing it.
Watch me. Hold my beer.
Now, she was at the Battle of Ayacucho, which is one of the most important battles in these wars for independence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not even Simon Bolivar was there, who's like leading all of these wars for independence. As proof that she had been at the battle, she carried around a mustache. She had taken off a dead enemy, and she would wear the mustache to masquerade balls. I don't even want to know. I don't even want to know how you get it off.
Like with a string?
I don't know. I don't want to know
Spirit
how
gum?
You got it off. I don't know how you put it on. I don't want to know. It happened. You did it. Good for you. I don't want to know.
It happened. You did
now,
it.
Don't tell me. She also allegedly had a pet bear that freaked people out.
Of course she did.
I mean, obviously.
Of course she did.
I mean, I want a pet dolphin, but a pet bear, way more badass. Now, in the mid-1820s, she would move with Bolivar back to Lima, to Bogota. On September 25th, 1828, mutinous officers would attempt to assassinate Bolivar, but Manuela was able to help him escape the attack.
No.
This caused Bolivar... It's good.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying she said no.
Yeah, she says no. This caused Bolivar to refer to her as... Libertadora del Libertador, or the liberator of liberators.
Oh, my.
Now, according to one source, she saved his life not just once, but twice. The first time was at a masquerade ball that Manuela was not invited to.
Rude.
When she heard about the plans to kill Bolivar, she went to the ball in full military garb and caused such a scene that they wouldn't let her in that Bolivar had to leave the ball to escort her home. Thus, the attempt on his life was thwarted. I just... Talk about a scene that I want to see. I also want to see
Absolutely.
This woman in full military garb being like, are you going to let me in?
Yeah.
Are you going to let me in?
Yeah.
You're not going to let me
and
in? I want to come in.
Bolivar comes to the door and is like, what are you doing?
And she's
what
like,
are you doing?
I'm not leaving unless you come with
she
me.
Just made, no, not even that. Just causing the scene. So, okay, I'm taking you home.
Right?
And they whisper to each other afterwards.
Yeah, like, don't go inside.
Oh,
you're going to die.
By the way, I just saved you.
Yeah.
That's probably why she wasn't invited.
Probably. The second time, Bolivar was aware of the assassination scheme, but was apparently unconcerned, lame, and didn't prepare extra protection. So Manuela convinced him to escape out the window just in time for the killers to enter his room, but they only found Manuela. They kept asking her questions about where he was, and she kept refusing to answer, and they were very frustrated by that.
I'm sure they were.
So they beat her with the flat of their sword, so just like it was a stick, not the sharp sides.
Right.
And Manuela continued to taunt them until they left, and she was bedridden for 2 weeks due to her injuries. So they were like...
Yeah, really going at it.
They were whipping a sister.
For real.
Bolivar managed to get by unscathed by hiding under a bridge for several hours. And also, apparently, he verbally took credit for fighting off his assassins and only referred to Manuela as the liberator of liberators in letters he wrote her. This is kind of hearsay, but like, I believe it.
A man not giving the woman full credit?
Mm-hmm. Now, despite her extremely very public affair with Simon Bolivar, let's remember Manuela's husband is James Thorne.
Oh, right.
Oops.
I forgot about that.
Forgot about him. So.
What's he up to?
So Thorne still wanted to be with her. I mean.
Yes, of course. She's Lord General Manuela.
Liberator of liberators.
The liberator of liberators.
But he's twice her age and she's like not having it. So he sends her a letter. I guess, or somehow is getting in touch with her. Now, she writes a letter that she sends to him and also to Simon Bolivar. So basically, she's like CCing the dudes and is like, check it. This is how I feel. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Actually, I will read the whole thing because it's pretty great. Do you believe, after being the mistress of this general for 7 years, with the security of possessing his heart, I could prefer to be the mistress of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, or the Holy Trinity? If I feel anything, it is that you haven't accepted any better your having being deserted. I know very well that nothing can untie me with him under the auspices that you call honor. But do you believe me less honorable for his being my lover and not my husband? Ah, I do not live under the social preoccupations invented for mutual torment. Leave me, my dear Englishman. Let's make a deal. In heaven, we'll marry again.
Oh.
But on earth, no.
It's over, dude.
Get over it. Stick it to the man. Oh, my God.
First of all, I left you 7 years ago.
Yeah. If I was going to translate this into modern vernacular, it's like, dude, bro, it's been 7 years. You are not going to get me to come home by calling me unhonorable. You are kind of a prude and super Christian, and I don't want to be with that. Also, you're not going to get me to come home by shaming me because right. I love him and we are doing it and you and I are not doing it and I am liking this. Peace out.
Deal with it.
I just love.
It ain't cute, dude.
Let's make a deal. In heaven, we'll marry again, but on earth, no. Yes.
Talk about a dear 1,000%. John.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, so
dear
much.
Thorn.
Dear James.
Enough.
No. In 1830, Bolivar left Bogota, and then he died from tuberculosis while in transit from Santa Marta. He had made no provisions for Manuela, who was then exiled from Peru by the very guy that they had conspired against, Francisco Santander. So she fled to Jamaica for the early years of her exile. And some sources say that after Bolivar died, Manuela unsuccessfully attempted suicide. Who knows?
Okay.
I mean, clearly they loved each other a seriously. Lot. Like, yeah. That was a serious...
It's quite the CC.
Yeah. Right. She attempted to return to South America through Ecuador in 1835, but the president revoked her passport. So then she just found refuge in northern Peru in a small coastal town where she lived for 25 years as an outcast. She made her living by selling tobacco and translating letters for North American whale hunters. Well, there were some highlights. While living there, she met Herman Melville.
Sure.
Casual. In 1847, her original husband, James Thorne, was murdered, and she was denied her 8,000 pesos inheritance. But some sources actually say that she refused his money, which I'm going
that
with
that.
That
makes more sense.
I'm like, that does make more sense, that she would be like, nah.
I don't.
No.
I said no.
I said no. I said no a bunch of times. Now, her stairs collapsed and she was disabled. So, and then Manuela died in 1856. Her body was buried in a communal mass grave and her belongings were burned. Oh, the few items that did survive included personal letters and artifacts that would later contribute to her legacy and her relationship with Simon Bolivar. Now, it's said that on his deathbed, Simon Bolivar asked his aide-de-camp to burn his remaining writings, letters, and speeches, but the man refused. Great job for history.
Thank you.
Shout out to that aide-de-camp.
Amen.
And amongst all of these writings, there were details of his personal life, including his affair with Manuela.
Okay.
And one source also says that before her own death, she gave her remaining letters to the same aide-de-camp. But I don't really know how that could have happened or like worked out unless that is one super devoted dude.
Sure.
So who knows? Now, in 2010, Manuela was given a full state burial in Venezuela. Since no official remains of her existed, symbolic remains were used. Soil from the mass grave was transported through Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, and finally to Venezuela.
Wow.
Those remains were laid in the National Pantheon of Venezuela, where the remains of Bolivar are also memorialized.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't until 1945 that Manuela's role in the revolution really began to get recognized. Before that, when people wrote about the revolution and Bolivar, they mostly cast her as like his lover or incapable of participating in the political sphere, blah, blah, blah. But we have a book written in 1945 that was a compilation of documents regarding Bolivar's life that disproved these stereotypes. And the ideas and characterization of Manuela also changed as there is an ideological shift in Latin America. So the rise of nationalism in the 60s, feminism in the 80s really helped kind of bring her story to life. She was portrayed in the fictional story, The General in His Labyrinth.
Wow.
And the non-fictional Manuela Sáenz, La Libertadora del Libertador. And these two books contributed to her humanization within pop culture and helped to politicize her image. She became increasingly popular with radical Latin American feminists, and her image was commonly used as a rallying point in the 80s and 90s. And the most popular image is usually of Manuela riding horseback dressed in men's clothing. And that was reenacted by female demonstrators in Ecuador in 1998. On May 25th, 2007, the Ecuadorian government symbolically gave Manuela the rank of general.
Look at that. And
there is a museum named after her located in Old Town Quito that contains personal effects from both her and Bolivar in order to safeguard the memories. And entrance to the museum is free with the purchase of one of the books about Manuela's life. And I want all museums to do that from now on.
Yes.
Like, you can come in for free, but you have to buy a book.
You know, here in Los Angeles County, there are programs where kids can pay off their late library book fees by reading with librarians. They can read off their...
That's amazing. Yeah. Can I do that?
Probably.
Not that I have any late fines, LAPL. I usually am good at it.
I got a library card, rented a book. It was late, and I've been scared to go back because I don't know if I have fees or not.
You can check online.
I'm going to go to Can I?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll do that.
I'll show you how.
Okay.
I go to my library account a lot. I'll help you out.
Okay, good. All right.
If you've been enjoying listening to this episode and learning about these incredible revolutionary women, literally revolutionary women, do us a favor. Leave us a review, a rating on whatever platform you're listening on, because those ratings and reviews help other people find the show, which helps us keep doing the show. So a heart, a smiley face, keep up the good work, share it with friends. We appreciate it.
Amen. Cause of the week?
Yeah.
I was thinking, because we're talking about revolutionary women, that we would talk about this incredibly important event that's happening. This episode's coming out on January 7th. This is happening on January 19th.
Get ready.
Not this Saturday, but next Saturday. Hashtag Women's March.
Hashtag Women's Wave.
Yeah, this year it's the hashtag Women's Wave. It is time to march again.
Get ready.
I'm so excited.
I'm so ready. I missed last year's.
Listen to this from the Women's March website.
Okay.
It's time to march again. The 2017 Women's March inspired hundreds of women to run, millions more to vote, and dozens to win elected office.
Yes.
The 2019 Women's March marks 2 years of resistance to the Trump presidency, 2 years of training new activists, and 2 years of building power. And this time, we're coming back with an agenda. On January 19th, 2019, we're going to flood the streets of Washington, D.C. and cities across the globe. The hashtag Women's Wave is coming, and we're sweeping the world forward with us.
Love it. The future is female.
Yes, ma'am. You can find out more about the Women's March, and you can find out where the march will be happening near you by going to womensmarch.com/2019.
Yes.
Yes.
If you want to keep up with us, see pictures of us when we attend. I know we'll be attending. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook just by searching The Bitchery of History. Tag us in photos if you go, especially if you go to your local marches.
Yes. If you are in Los Angeles and you get one of the stickers from us, take a picture with us or just tag The Bitchery of History with wearing your photo.
And if you aren't in Los Angeles and you want those stickers, don't worry. Just go to thebitcheryofhistory.com, go to the shop, we'll mail you some.
Yes. Three stickers or more is free shipping.
What? I love free.
Yes, me too. We could not do this, of course, without the most amazing team in podcasting. Thank you, Jeanette,
Kim,
Jess,
and Sydney.
And as always, remember,
bitches get stuff done.